Thanks very much, Kim. It is a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. And I, for one, am glad that you are. Thanks very much. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Andrea Haynes as well. She's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation, joins us most Fridays. I want to say, Andrea, this isn't so much about innovation, but, you know, all eyes are on England this week and next week because of Brexit. And we're going to go to London in the second half hour today. Talk to a writer for Bloomberg who is in London and weighing all of that. But first, innovation and driverless cars. Welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thanks. Good to see you.
Bring that microphone up a little close to you. Should have told you before. But okay, so I love this. You know, we, first of all, when I hear things like a driverless car, I'm like, yeah. Okay, maybe one day. It's not really going to happen. It's really going to happen, isn't it?
It is. There's some maybe fairly optimistic projections that'll be within a few years. I don't know if that will necessarily be true for widespread adoption, but when you think about the preparation that would have to be done for them, you know, even if it takes longer than that, it's probably time to be thinking about what it might mean.
And that got the focus of Chicago's Autonomous Future. One of the speakers addressed that, and we'll talk about the revenue in a second, but I want to about infrastructure and all of that, too, about how cities are going to have to prepare for the day when a majority of cars are driverless or just many cars? What are we talking about?
Yeah, I think, it could be either. I mean, presumably one day they could all be driverless. You know, again, that's not something I think we need to worry about in the next 2 years, but, you know, it's definitely going to change things on the roadways and change a lot of things about how we get around.
So they think like Uber and Lyft and those companies will be the early adopters.
There's thoughts that they would, you know, talk about disruption. You know, then they don't even need a driver
right,
to kind of move you from point A to point B.
So it's like the Jetsons. You'll just get in the back seat of a car and there'll be no one in the front?
Yeah, and cruise along.
Okay, so what does the city need to do? How do they need to prepare for these driverless cars?
Yeah, so consultants who, you know, will be offering services to help cities deal with this, of course, but they're looking ahead at what some of the meanings of this might be. One interesting thing that we were discussing was the idea that streets could be narrower because you won't necessarily need to allow for that human, you know, margin of error where we need a certain amount of space between us. You know, if things are more programmable, you might not need wide roadways, for example. So there's infrastructure changes like that that you could imagine.
How about cameras, red light cameras and things?
Yeah, so red light cameras and all of our, you know, traffic violations bring in a lot of money to the cities and help pay for the roadways that we all use. So one of the possible concerns is that if you have, you know, quote unquote, perfect automated driving, you no longer will have some of those sources of revenues that pay for the roads.
So is the city getting ready for this? I mean, are they looking at this plan?
Yeah, this was a presentation to the Chicago Loop Alliance. So it's, you know, sort of early stage talking, I would say, at this point. And it's, you know, people trying to raise awareness just of what some of the issues are.
Yeah.
I don't know that they're too far along yet. And again, it may not be quite as soon as we think.
Just what a drag it would be not to have to worry about red light cameras.
I know, right? Yeah.
But speaking of the red lights, though, one other thing that they think that the cars will be able to communicate with the red lights one day, so that in a way you might not even need the red lights.
Yeah, you can imagine kind of a perfectly automated experience at some point.
That's just a wild thing, and we'll see. So Andrea says it'll be here the year after next.
Always the year after next with innovation, right?
speaking of things that are coming here in July, the innovation is this Array program. And I'm not sure I understand the value of this, but the city's posting a bunch of cameras around the city, and they're going to use it, what, to keep track of traffic, or what exactly is this
about? Yeah, so they're actually sensors. They're like networks of sensors, and I feel like people should be more interested in this than they might be, and it might be the name Array of Things that is driving people away from it. I'm not sure, but people will start to see these go up. They're kind of black boxes, and they, you know, they have sort of hubs, sensor networks, and their purpose is to gather, you know, weather data, traffic data, idea being that you would extract that data and improve city life. If 100 dogs walk by in a week, you say we need a dog park or whatever the case may be. It helps you understand traffic flow, you know, how many people are walking past a particular area, things like that. In the process of gathering that data, though, you have a situation where you obviously have a government, you know, watching
so
us,
that pictures always of you walking
issues.
Yeah,
so they will be able to tell, you know, they kind of explained it to us that you'd be able to tell, you know, it's a person of this size with this color hair. They're, you know, it's not completely specific data, but it's a lot of data.
Right. You know. Well, you know, I mean, the city already has cameras all over the place, right?
Yep.
And if you watch British TV like I do, they're always referring to the CCTV.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime there's a crime, everything's on cameras there. So this is going to be less than that, right? And don't you think we're kind of going there anyway?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on your feeling. Like, I think, you know, people feel like, some people feel like privacy is dead anyway, so what does it matter?
Right, right.
Others would say, you know, it's all in how you administer it. Like, the plans for it all sound good, but things aren't always in practice run as well as they could be, or when there are, let's say, violations of something, how is that handled? So, you know, it brings up a lot of issues.
Right, and so these things are going to be going up next month, and it's starting, I think, with 45 cameras, but it's going to expand. I keep saying cameras. That's not the right term.
Yeah, cameras isn't quite the right term, but it's fine. But
black
boxes. There's 42 sensor networks, or whatever you want to call them, going up in the very near future, but it will be 500 eventually. And it's funny, we posted a map of the locations on blueskyinnovation.com, and 42 even looks like a lot. It looks like it's at a lot of corners,
right.
And, you know, it'll be 500, so there'll be quite a lot of them around the city.
All right, check that out, blueskyinnovation.com. Andrea Haines is the editor. Thanks for coming by today.
Sure,
enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
It's the Business Lunch on 720. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Tom Gimbel is on a phone line from the LaSalle Network, and we're going to join him now. Which line is he on there, Michael Heidemann? We're going to go to line 7. Tom Gimbel, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Always good to be with you. Sorry I couldn't be in studio today.
It's a beautiful day. I hope you're on a golf course somewhere.
Not yet. I would like that myself.
All right, so it's Father's Day, right? Everyone's talking. Do you get overwhelmed with Father's Day stuff?
You know what? We try to do a lot, but I've got my youngest son is 11 years old and plays lacrosse, so I'm actually going to be in Lake Geneva at his lacrosse tournament on Sunday.
Well, I hope you enjoy that. I won't be there. but I like our topic this week because, you know, it's an interesting idea that a business manager, or an office manager, you know, anyone else is in a way. Well, I don't know. I think people might argue, but you're looking at it as if they can learn from parenting when it comes to managing people in the office. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so I think you look at what you do with your children. And, well, number one, you look at your if you have more than one kid, it's really helpful because you realize that even though you raised them and or majority of people gave birth to them, that all of them are different. And
right.
How they respond is different. How they talk to you are different. And so that's the same thing when you're managing staff. Everybody's different. So how can you have a one-size-fits-all? So if you bring that from parenting to work, that's lesson number one. Number two, what I always call the chicken nugget analogy.
Yeah.
Right, is that chicken fingers or chicken tenders or nuggets or whatever they're called, right? It's the same thing at every restaurant, but how come kids want to go to different restaurants and order the same thing? Right, it's the same thing when you're managing staff. Is that it's environment, it's where things are at. Having the same meeting in the same place with everybody sitting in the same chairs every time is like going to the same restaurant every single dinner and always getting chicken tenders. Right?
I like that. So you say focus more on experience, maybe move it around.
Exactly.
It's like having class outside.
A little recess, a little lesson under the tree in the shade never hurt anybody.
And when it comes to, you know, kids, you're always trying to help them with their development, help them grow, learn things, and that's not much different when it comes to an employee.
No, and even the fact of reminding people of things. So, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago when I got out of college, it was always, there were two things that were almost exact opposites. There's no such thing as a dumb question.
Right.
And you should never, you should only need to be told something once. And now in today's day and age, there's data science that says people need to hear things 9 times before they can retain it to memory.
It's like an Irma Bombeck joke where someone's got their mouth, she says, stop talking with your mouth full. Now answer my question.
Exactly right. So I relate it with kids. I would say kids know that they have to go to the bathroom. They know what the result is if they don't go to the bathroom, both the pain and the pressure as well as having wet pants, right?
Right.
But they don't always remember to do it. And it's the same thing at work. People know that there's certain T's they have to cross and I's they have to dot or they're going to get in trouble or there's going to be a retribution from a client, but they still make mistakes. So we need to take that lesson from kids sans the spankings and take it to work. And teach people and remind them and explain to them why it's important. But reminding people isn't a bad thing. That's actually what our jobs are as leaders and managers.
You know, the other thing that I think is the most important, well, so important, and I've been with bosses who didn't do this, who were loath to do this, and I'm with bosses now who are just the opposite, but praise is so important in a workplace.
is. And it's, you know, it's funny because so often today it's the participation trophy mentality that kids are getting. But we forget that the baby boomers are the ones that gave the trophies to everybody, right? The millennials.
Oh, true. You're right.
And so that no kid says, hey, we want a trophy for everything. Give it to us. That's how you should parent. People make these decisions. And it's the same thing at work, is that we're going to go on Facebook and people are going to go on social media, or even if they're not at work, and they're going to talk about how great their kids are all the time. Well, why don't you do that about your employees when they hit a goal? Why don't you talk about that? Give them the recognition publicly about how good they did on a project, how much money they saved the company or made the company. That's really a motivating, culture-building environment and activity.
It expresses the fact that you value them and they're going to want to keep working harder for you.
Absolutely. People want to know. It's just as simple as saying, I love you, right? And that those are the things that we say to our kids in this generation all the time, and that we longed for our parents to say to us. And it's the same thing at work. Employees want to know that they're loved and appreciated.
That's what you're going to tell your son on Sunday when he's playing lacrosse up in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
I don't care how many goals he scores, as long as he's a good sport and runs hard.
I thought you were going to say, I don't care how many goals he scores, as long as he scores one.
As long as I get home for my dinner.
Have a great weekend, Tom. Great to talk
Take
to you.
Take care. Happy Father's Day.
You bet. Same to you. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Team Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's 12:37 Friday afternoon, the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, are you selling your house? Chances are greater that you're trying to buy a house than you're selling a house, actually. Barry Sterner is here, the founder, the principal, the CEO of Townstone Financial. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Appreciate it.
Well, okay, so, you know, there's all this talk, and the Fed met again this week, and they decided not to raise rates. Maybe there'll be once. They did raise them late last year. Has that had any impact on the mortgage rates, or what has been the impact?
I think I was here the day after they raised last time, and we have gone consistently downward. We're at three-year lows.
That's not supposed to happen, is it?
Well, you know, the Fed only controls short-term rates between banks. And, you know, the 10-year note, which is what the 30-year fix and the 15-year fix, the home mortgage market goes off of, is really a world market. And because of the weakness that we're seeing with the housing stat, with the unemployment report that we had 2 weeks ago for May, and what's happened worldwide, Europe, China, kind of a slowdown right now, you know, people are buying 10-year notes. People are buying U.S. government bonds. And the more they buy, the lower rates go down. And people are being conservative right now. I think in the marketplace, they're certainly worried about the stock market with what's going on right now with the election and things of that nature. So that has driven down rates, and it's fantastic for home mortgages.
Okay, so there are, I mean, from what I hear, and I live in Deerfield, and it seems to me like there are a lot of houses for sale within the past month or so. But I hear in the area wide that the supply has been the issue, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the number of houses, we were talking before in the South Loop right now, when I'm going outside on the weekends, I saw two houses for sale, open houses, I should say. There's probably a few more. And you're probably talking about open houses too when you're seeing the signs.
I just see the signs in the driveway.
Very, very limited supply out there. I don't know the exact statistics other than I know that people are making multiple offers. As I was saying previously, right now, over the last 24 hours, I've given three pre-qualifications right now, and I know today, this morning, in fact, that two of them are putting in offers, and they're very, very worried about multiple offers on the homes and them not getting it, which leads to bidding above the sales price. And we have not seen that since, I'm going to say, 2010.
So are we back to that? People are actually bidding on houses?
Absolutely, bidding on houses over. Let's look at Deerfield, where you live. Fantastic school district.
Right.
People want to be there next September for their kids to start school. I mean, specific areas where they have to live in that particular area for school, for job related, things like that, they're bidding up, and you're seeing multiple offers right now. You know, we're not going up 10-20% the way that we were 8 years ago, but we're still increasing in Chicagoland. They just had a report. We've been going up about 4.3% on a monthly basis.
But Chicago and Illinois is really lagged behind when it comes to the housing
countrywide
market, right?
Absolutely.
So that it could be good news for us, at least that the home prices are going to be going up.
We still, and last week the government had a report, we still in Illinois have almost, I think we're number one in the most underwater, right, mortgages in the United States, which just is so odd if you think about.
And that's why perhaps the supply is low, right? Because people don't want to sell their house knowing that they're going to lose they're going to lose money if they sell their house.
I spoke to a young lady who's a friend of mine who bought a house in 2010 in Romeoville, Illinois. And yet she bought the house for $145,000 in 2010. We just did an appraisal, and she's at $140,000. She wants to get out of the house. She's a teacher. She's, you know, got good credit and all that good stuff. But, you know, she's still a little bit in her mind, not her mortgage. Her mortgage was only like $115,000,
right.
$120,000. And I said, you're still going to get some equity out. And she said, no, I paid $145,000. We'll wait till next year. And maybe we'll be at 145. I don't know if that's great thinking if you really want to move, but I agree with you 100%. I think that's in the back of people's mind. I paid for this X, and I'm not selling it for less.
So how are we doing in the region? Is the Midwest comparing to the rest of the country?
I mean, the Midwest has been slow. There's no doubt about that for the appreciation level. But, again, you compare it to Nevada, California, some of the places that went up 20, 30%, San Francisco, I was reading this morning about. And, you know, we never had the crazy appreciation that they had, although we did have very good appreciation. So we've just been slow to move up, you know, to catch up with that, because I actually was in Nevada 2 weeks ago. I was reading the newspaper, and I know they've gone up almost 20% on a year-to-year basis,
right,
over the last, I think it was 18 months. So they're doing very well. There is no doubt, I want to say this so everyone, the housing market is propelling itself just by the fact that there's a lack of supply right now, and people who are buying are strong borrowers. They have good credit. They have good jobs. Obviously, the guidelines right now are still pretty tough. So when you're buying a house, you're not a weak person buying a house, putting 0% down, you know, with a first and a second. You're buying that house. You're a strong person, and that's helping the housing market. And I personally think the housing market is doing very well, and it's the best time to buy a house since 2008.
I don't even know, because I guess I refinanced with you guys maybe
absolutely
a year or two ago. Where are the rates now?
We are at three-year lows right now because of the 10-year bond is at about 1.6. So anybody who's over 4%, even 3.875 now on a 30-year fixed, 3.5 to 3.25 on a 15-year fixed, and you haven't refinanced in the last 3 years, it's a really good time to pick up the phone and call Townstone. Go to townstone.com. We'll give you all the options. We'll show you. We do no-cost refinances with no hidden costs. So I just think it's time to take a look. There's so much savings in your mortgage. I mean, if you save $50 a month, $600.
Right, right. Did you just say this? I apologize if I missed it. But how do you figure, like, if you can save a half a point or $50, what's the gauge of?
Well, I mean, the bigger your mortgage, the more a quarter point or half a point is going to be. So when I hear people on TV saying, well, you can only refinance if it's a quarter or three quarters, if you have a large mortgage and you go down a quarter or an eighth of a point, it could be $75 to $100
that
a month.
Right, right.
So to me, if you're not paying any closing costs and you're able to save $25 to $50 a month, and that's going to be $600 a year, you're going to say you're going to stay in that house 5 years. That's $3,000. I mean, there's a little bit of paperwork. We all know that. But I think if you can do a no-cost refinance for an eighth or a quarter and save that kind of money, it's a great way to tack on some money at the end of every month to pay your bills. And obviously, you got to pay for your medical costs, which are always going up.
Yeah, so it's like found money in some ways.
Definitely.
Barry Sterner, Townstone Financial, thanks for coming by.
Great. I really appreciate it.
It's the Business Lunch on 720. We're going to go to London after this and talk about Brexit, too. You want to talk about Brexit, Barry? Any comments on that? Or
I would talk about Brexit, but, you know, I just don't want the British to exit.
No.
How's that? That's my answer to that. Everybody on CNBC is talking about it.
Barry Sterner kicks it off. We'll have more after this on the Business Lunch. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch here in Chicago, Illinois. We're going to leave the country, in fact, go to London and say hello this afternoon or this evening maybe to Robert Hutton, who writes for Bloomberg. Robert, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hello there.
I appreciate you joining us. You know, I've wanted to talk about Brexit and what's going on for weeks. I keep bringing it up. And then earlier this week, tragedy, I think, maybe made more people aware of it than they might have been otherwise with the killing of the member of parliament there. So just one question about that before we move on. Is that related to all of this, or was it just a terribly unfortunate coincidence?
We don't know. is the answer. We know that, Joe Cox was a passionate campaigner for Britain's membership of the European Union. We know that she was killed yesterday. A man is under arrest. There have been suggestions, the police say, that he was linked to far-right groups. There is a suggestion that he may have shouted something like, put Britain first, but we don't know at this stage what the link was. The effect it has been to silence all the political debate about this issue for more than 24 hours now.
And I would imagine the political debate has been all-consuming there for much more than 24 hours, and David Cameron and the Labour leader I know appeared together today. There must be just sort of a chasm of silence in a way.
Well, yes, although what there has been in its place is a lot of discussion about the way that political discussion takes place. I know this is a debate that goes on a little bit in the US at the moment. Well, this has been a very acrimonious debate, one of the ugliest in British politics that I can remember. There have been things said on both sides that we have all been thinking it's going to be very difficult when this referendum is over next week for both sides to come back from this and make friends. And for those who don't know, the twist in this is that both sides in the Brexit debate are basically within the governing Conservative Party. So there are Conservatives like the Prime Minister David Cameron who want to stay in the European Union, and there are many, many people in his party who passionately want to get out. And those passions have risen very high, and it has been a very nasty debate. And the question that people have been asking today is whether the death of Joe Cox is a moment to just sit and think about how we want to conduct ourselves.
Well, we could all use those moments for sure. What happens if the vote is yes and the vote is to exit? Is that it? Is it over? Is it automatic?
No. We don't even know how long it would take to get out. Years. No country has ever really, and certainly no country of Britain's size has ever left the European Union. There are so many treaties into which we are bound. There are so many ways in which European law is bound into British law now. It would be a long divorce process. And one of the big questions in this debate has been, how would that divorce work? How acrimonious would it be? Access to the children, everything. What neither side says is, oh, it will be very straightforward. The leavers say, reckon they could have it done by 2019.
Right.
The remainers say that you'd still be dealing with it long after that.
Let me ask you a few quick questions. We've got just a minute left.
Sure.
Opponents are the people who want to get out. What I read is that's all about immigration. Is that fair?
They would say it's all about sovereignty, but their campaign is all about immigration.
Okay.
So that's fair, yes.
And those who want to stay in, they say it's all about the power of the European collective, or what's the argument to stay in?
Their argument for staying in is that it would be very economically damaging to leave.
Okay.
Basically, this debate is jobs versus foreigners.
And the solution is going to be, or the resolution, what do you think is going to happen next week?
Well, if you'd asked me a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I would have said it was definitely going to be a Remain vote, and then Leave have just come on very strongly in the polls in the last couple of weeks, and then we've had this death, and we don't know what impact that's going to have. We would normally expect in a referendum a swing back to the status quo in the final week. So it is now extremely uncertain, I would say.
Robert Hutton writes for Bloomberg.com. You can check out what he's writing about Brexit there. Robert, thank you very much for joining us today. I appreciate it. I know it's a very busy time for you.
My pleasure.
That's Robert Hutton. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.